Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're tackling something, well, something we all deal with, stress.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe more importantly, how we actually cope with it.
Yeah, that coping piece is key.
We've got some great material here from an early summer 2025 class, lecture slides, a transcript.
Right.
Lots of good stuff.
Right. So our mission today
is basically to distill all that, get to the key definitions, the models, the strategies, give you a clear kind of actionable understanding.
Exactly. Cut through the jargon, make it practical. Think of it as, you know, your guide to the science of stress and how to handle it better.
Okay, let's dive right in then. What is stress? The lecture defines it pretty clearly.
It does. It starts with it being a negative emotional experience.
But it's more than just feeling bad, right? There's a whole reaction.
Oh, absolutely. That negative feeling kicks off a whole cascade. You've got predictable biochemical changes happening inside.
Stuff you don't even notice sometimes.
Right. Then the physiological stuff, the sweating, heart racing, blood pressure.
Which things you do notice.
Definitely. And then there's the psychological adaptation, how you think differently, how you behave differently.
So it's this whole mind-body response, and it's aimed at either, what, changing the situation?
Yeah, altering the stressful event, if you can.
Or just dealing with it, accommodating its effects.
Exactly. Those are your two main paths. And the thing that starts it all off is the stressor.
The trigger.
The trigger, yeah. An event, a situation, an experience.
Yeah.
Anything that causes that stress response.
And the sources gave a bunch of examples. Things like noise, overcrowding.
Yeah, environmental stuff. But also bad relationships, work pressures.
Interpersonal things.
Yeah,
even just awkward situations, right? Like that example in the transcript about walking in on something unexpected.
Huh, yeah, that one. Or the public speaking example, how stressful that can be, especially as a kid. That really resonated.
Oh, tell me about it. Public speaking was terrifying for me back then. And now we've got modern stressors too, like social media. That is a whole new layer.
It really does. That constant comparison, the FOMO, it's a unique pressure. And understanding these triggers is vital because stress isn't just unpleasant. It can actually, well, make you sick.
Right. This is where it gets really interesting. The link between stress and disease. How does that work? The diagram showed a few pathways.
Yeah, it's not just one thing. There are direct physiological effects like elevated lipids, higher blood pressure, lower immunity.
So your body is directly impacted.
Directly. But stress also pushes us towards poor health habits. You know, more smoking, maybe drinking more, eating junk food, not sleeping.
Yeah, the comfort food trap or sacrificing sleep.
Exactly. Increased drug use can also happen. And these habits lead to poor health behavior effects.
Like not taking your meds.
Or just generally not looking after yourself properly. It becomes a cycle.
The transcript mentioned that pattern with students, right? Getting sick around midterms or finals.
Precisely. That timing isn't a coincidence.
Yeah.
You're stressed. Your immunity drops.
And then, boom, you get sick. Often right after the stress lets up, like during Christmas break.
It's a classic pattern. Your body holds on, then crashes.
So it's not just the stressor itself, but how we see it. Our interpretation matters. Which brings us to person-environment fit.
Yes, exactly. This concept is all about perception.
Okay, unpack that for us.
Basically, it's your assessment. Do you feel you have the resources, the time, the energy, the skills, the support to handle whatever stressor is coming at you?
So if you feel like, yeah, I got this, the resources are adequate.
Then it might not even feel like stress. It might feel like a challenge, maybe even exciting. Low stress.
But if you feel overwhelmed, like you just don't have what it takes, inadequate resources.
That's when you feel stressed out. Big time.
The lecture used the example of managing course load, right? Deciding how many credits to take based on what you think you can handle.
Yeah, or that one-page essay example. For one student, no big deal.
Easy key.
For another student drowning in other work, it's the last straw.
Same stressor, totally different reaction based on perceived resources. Makes sense.
So how do we make sense of all this? Well, there are different models of stress. The lecture focuses on three main ones.
Okay. Fight or flight, general adaptation syndrome, GAOS?
Yep, GAS, and tend and befriend.
Let's start with fight or flight. That feels pretty fundamental.
It is. It's ancient, really.
Yeah.
Activation of the sympathetic nervous system, the endocrine system.
The body's alarm system.
Totally. It yanks the body out of homeostasis, that balanced state.
Gets you ready to either, well, fight the threat or run away.
That's the primal survival mechanism, confront or flee. It's life-saving in, you know, acute situations. Think caveman and tiger. Like the transcript mentioned.
Right. But the problem comes when it's switched on all the time.
Exactly. Chronic activation is where the damage happens.
Yeah.
Cardiovascular issues, weakened immune function, anxiety. It's built for short bursts, not marathons.
Got it. Okay, so what about the general adaptation syndrome, GAS? This came from research on rats.
Yeah, Hans Lee's work. He exposed rats to all sorts of unpleasant things. Heat, cold, electric shocks, you name it.
Sounds rough for the rats.
It was. But he found something really crucial.
What was that?
No matter what the stressor was, the rats showed the same pattern of physiological responses.
Really? Like what?
Their adrenal cortex got larger, the thymus and lymph glands shrank, and they developed ulcers in the stomach and duodenum.
Ulcers. That links directly to the common idea that stress gives people ulcers.
It does. While it's more complex in humans' thinning stomach lining, more acid the core idea holds. Chronic stress wears down the system. That's a key takeaway from GAS, wear and tear.
The lecture also mentioned good stress. Is that a real thing?
Well, yeah, in a way.
Yeah.
That short-term pressure that helps you perform at your peak, like an athlete before a big race.
Okay, eustress.
Right. Versus that chronic, grinding negative stress that just depletes you over the long haul.
And the point was made that our baseline stress level today is just higher.
Seems that way. Modern life throws things like job insecurity, debt, that constant social media pressure at us. Things that are ongoing, not just acute threats.
So our bodies are constantly trying to adapt?
Until they can't anymore. That's the tipping point. That's when you see the breakdowns, the anxiety, depression, ulcers, high blood pressure, heart attacks.
Okay, so GAS has phases, three of them.
Yep. First is alarm.
That's the initial shock, the tiger in the driveway moment.
Exactly. Mobilize resources, fight or flight kicks in.
Then comes resistance.
This is the coping phase. You're dealing with it, managing daily stress, resisting breaking down. Your body adapts. Might even seem normal on the outside.
But inside, it's working overtime.
Right. Resistance is high, but resources are being used up. Think about how students feel utterly drained by the end of a tough semester or their whole degree. That's resistance taking its toll.
And if the stress keeps going or it's just too much?
You hit exhaustion. Physical resources are depleted. Your ability to resist just collapses.
Yeah.
You become vulnerable to illness, breakdown.
Makes sense. But GAS isn't perfect, right? The lecture pointed out limitations.
Definitely. A big one is it gives limited role to psychological factors.
Like how we think about the stress.
Exactly. We know our interpretation is huge, but GAS focuses mostly on the physiological reaction.
It also kind of assumes everyone reacts the same way.
Which we know isn't true.
Yeah.
People respond very differently. And it suggests stress only happens when the stressor is present.
But we know anticipating something stressful is stressful too, like that hypothetical classroom scenario mentioned.
Precisely. Just thinking about it can trigger the response.
Okay, so the third model is tend and befriend. This brings in a social angle.
Yes, very much so. It suggests, especially for females, another common response beyond just fight or flight.
Which is?
Tending nurturing activities, protecting offspring, and befriending, seeking social contact, building support networks, that herding behavior.
And this is linked to oxytocin.
Yeah, higher levels of oxytocin are associated with this. It's that bonding hormone.
Interesting contrast to the idea of men maybe tending to withdraw or check out under stress.
It is. And the transcript notes that this female tendency to communicate, to seek support, can actually be really productive in finding solutions.
So, ultimately, the stress we feel really depends on our psychological appraisal, how we size up the situation.
That's the core idea. It happens in two stages. Primary appraisal first.
Okay, primary is, what does this mean to me?
Pretty much. Is it positive, negative, or just neutral? If it's negative, you dig deeper. Is it harm, damage already done, threat, potential future harm, or challenge something I could overcome?
Like falling down the stairs example. Harm is the fall. Threat is embarrassment.
But maybe challenge is laughing it off, turning it into a story.
Okay. Then secondary appraisal.
That's where you look at yourself. What coping abilities do I have? What resources are available to deal with this harm, threat, or challenge?
So can I handle it? Back to person environment fit again?
Exactly. And this whole appraisal process, primary and secondary, leads to your specific stress response. Physiological, cognitive, emotional, behavioral.
And people show it differently on the outside.
Hugely differently.
Right.
Someone might look calm, but be churning inside.
Let's get into the physiology a bit more. The actual systems involved. Two main ones.
Yep. The sympathetic adrenomedullary system, SAM, and the hypothalamic pituitary adrenocortical axis, HPA.
Okay, SAM sounds like the fast one.
It is. Your brain labels something as harmful, info goes to the hypothalamus.
Control center.
Right, which kicks off the sympathetic nervous system arousal. Fight or flight. It stimulates the adrenal medulla.
inner part of the adrenal gland.
Yeah, to secrete epinephrine and norepinephrine. Catecholamines.
Adrenaline, basically.
Like,
leading to the fast heart rate, sweating.
All those immediate sympathetic arousal signs. That's Sam. Quick reaction.
And the HPA axis, that's the other one.
That's the slower, more sustained response. The hypothalamus releases CRF, corticotropin releasing factor.
Okay.
That tells the pituitary gland to secrete ACTH, adrenocorticotropic hormone.
A lot of acronyms here.
Yeah. ACTH then travels to the adrenal cortex, the outer part of the adrenal gland, and tells it to release cortisol.
Cortisol, the stress hormone, what's its job?
It does a few things. Helps conserve energy, reduces inflammation. Importantly, it also tells the hypothalamus to stop releasing CRF, a negative feedback loop.
To shut the system down once the stress is over.
Ideally, yes. Brings the body back to a steady state. But the problem is, chronic activation messes with cortisol levels, keeps them high, or makes them fluctuate erratically. Not good.
And the amount released depends on that appraisal we talked about.
Yes, exactly. That listener question in the transcript was spot on. Your perception influences the hormonal response. Doctors even look at cortisol levels as a stress biomarker.
So chronic stress keeps these systems firing, leading to allostatic load.
Bingo. Allostatic load is that cumulative wear and tear we mentioned. The body isn't designed for this long-term activation. Think of the camel's back analogy again. The body's keeping tabs.
And that constant flood of cortisol, epinephrine.
Right.
What does it do long-term?
A whole range of things. Suppresses the immune system, keeps blood pressure and heart rate high, can cause arrhythmias, messes with brain chemistry leading to mood disorders, increases lipids, disrupts sleep.
Wow. And those can lead to even bigger problems.
Yeah, things like weight gain, diabetes, heart attacks. The comparison between, say, a doctor or lawyer versus someone with a low-stress job at age 50, their physiological age can be very different.
Those pictures of presidents aging rapidly in office really show that visual toll.
They really do. Even if someone seems okay, that decline from chronic stress can accelerate quickly towards the end.
So what actually makes an event stressful? It's not just the event itself.
Right. It depends on our assessment. But some factors generally increase stress. Negative events, obviously.
Things we can't control or predict.
Huge factors. Uncontrollable or unpredictable events, like terrorism or a sudden tornado, are way more stressful than something predictable like an exam you can study for.
Ambiguity, too. Not knowing what's going on.
Yeah, ambiguous events are tough. Feeling overloaded with tasks is another big one. And whether it's a central part of your life being affected.
Like losing your job or a loved one versus something minor, like a distant relative's broken foot.
Exactly. Central versus peripheral stressors.
So can we adapt? Can we get used to stress? Or does it just cause chronic strain?
Well, both are possible. Psychologically, we can adapt to moderate stress using coping strategies.
But maybe not to really big things, like the death of a parent.
Right. Highly stressful events are much harder to adapt to psychologically. And importantly, even if you feel like you're adapting mentally,
your body might still be paying the price.
Exactly. The physiological pathway is separate. You can get physiological adaptation habituation, where the initial jolt lessens, but also chronic strain, which adds to that allostatic load and can compromise immunity over time.
And anticipating stress can be as bad as the real thing.
Absolutely. And the after effects linger, sometimes dramatically, like with PTSD, cognitive issues, sleep problems, guilt, anger.
The lecture mentioned different life events having different stress weights, like on the social readjustment rating scale.
Yeah, the SRRS. It assigns life change units to events. Death of a spouse is highest. But even seemingly positive things like marriage or vacation cause change, and thus some stress, divorce, being fired, Christmas. They all rank.
And stress early in life, that can have really long-term effects.
Definitely. Early trauma can actually dysregulate the developing stress systems, makes people more reactive to stress later on.
Things like low SES, bad family situations, bullying, being a refugee.
All those chronic early life stressors can contribute to long-term physical and mental health risks.
Okay, let's shift gears fully now. Coping. How do we actually manage all this? What is coping?
Coping is basically the thoughts and behaviors we use to manage the demands, internal or external, of situations we appraise as stressful.
So it's what we think and what we do.
Exactly. And it's dynamic. It changes over time, involves lots of different reactions, and personality plays a huge role.
Our personalities shape how we cope.
Massively. It's a mix of genetics and environment. For example, negative affectivity or neuroticism.
Tendency towards negative emotions.
Right. It's linked with poorer health, more absence from work, often lower coping skills. They report distress more often.
What about pessimism?
A pessimistic explanatory style, always explaining bad things negatively, also links to lower coping skills. Like that funny Snow in Toronto mockumentary idea for the transcript.
Huh. And perfectionism. Seems stressful just thinking about it.
It is. Constantly chasing impossible standards creates stress, uses up coping energy, adds to allostatic load.
Okay, but there are positive traits too, right? Things that help us cope.
Absolutely. Dispositional optimism is a big one.
Seeing the glass half full.
Basically, yeah. Having a positive outlook is linked to better health, more active coping, seeing stressors as more manageable.
What about self-compassion?
Treating yourself with kindness, especially when things are tough. Realizing you're human, being mindful of your distress without harsh judgment. It's more robust than just self-esteem, apparently. Helps with all sorts of stress.
Kind of like Stuart Smalley, but maybe deeper. I'm good enough.
Huh, maybe. It's about that kindness. Gratitude is another one.
Being thankful.
Noticing the positives, appreciating things. Linked to better coping, better sleep.
Psychological control. Feeling like you have some say.
Crucial. Believing you can influence things, your behavior, the outcome. It's tied to better health and better coping results.
And self-esteem. Liking yourself.
High self-esteem can buffer stress, especially lower-level stress. And ego strengths being dependable, trusting, not impulsive. That has health benefits, too. Higher self-confidence helps buffer stress.
So, beyond traits, we have coping styles, general approaches.
Yeah, like a personality preference for how you handle stress. One distinction is avoidant versus approach.
Avoidant is minimizing, pushing it away.
Right. Might work okay for short-term stuff, but not great long-term. Approach coping, confronting the problem is generally better, especially long-term.
Then there's problem-focused versus emotion-focused.
Problem-focused tackles the actual problem constructively. Emotion-focused manages the feelings around the problem.
Which is better.
We usually use a mix, but generally, aiming for more problem-focused coping tends to lead to better outcomes. Though managing emotions is obviously important, too.
And external factors matter, too, right? Things outside us, like SES.
Hugely. Socioeconomic status is a major external driver. Lower SES often means more stressors and fewer coping resources. It correlates strongly with weaker coping skills and higher allostatic load. That graph showing SES and death rates was pretty stark.
Wow. So what builds resilience? How do we bounce back?
Positive life events help. Rest, relaxation, vacation. That study linking vacation time to health is telling. Maybe doctors should prescribe vacation.
I'd take that prescription.
Me too. And psychological resilience itself, that ability to bounce back, to even find positive emotions during tough times. Though achieving that is often harder than physical recovery. External resources, SES, existing allostatic load all play into it.
Are there specific interventions that can help boost coping?
Yes, definitely. Things like mindfulness-based stress reduction, MBSR.
Meditation, focusing on the present.
Exactly. Systematic training to focus on the stressor without getting lost in other worries. It improves quality of life, sleep, lowers stress. Fits with that modern idea of getting off the grid a bit.
What about just talking or writing about it? Disclosure.
Very beneficial. Both talking it out and journaling seem to help process emotions and experiences.
And stress management programs, like workshops.
Yep. They usually have phases. Identify your stressors. Learn and practice coping skills, then apply them in the real world. Universities often have these, sometimes online too, which offers flexibility and anonymity, like Carleton's Wellness Services mentioned.
And finally, the big one, social support.
Absolutely crucial. It's central to the biopsychosocial model. Having people you can count on makes a huge difference.
Different kinds of support, right?
Yeah, tangible help, like family bringing food when you're sick, informational support advice from friends who've been there. And emotional support, just having someone listen and care.
Even pets can count sometimes.
Increasingly recognized, yeah. Though the potential for misuse is there too. But fundamentally, connection helps us cope.
Okay, so bringing this all together, stress is complex. It hits our bodies, our minds, our behaviors.
It really is an intricate web. Biology, psychology, our social world. It's all connected.
But the key takeaway seems to be that coping isn't fixed. We can get better at it.
Absolutely. It's a dynamic process. We can learn, adapt, and build resilience. There are real strategies we can use.
So maybe the thought to leave everyone with is just take a moment. Think about how you react to stress. What are your go-to coping methods?
Yeah, reflect on that. Did anything we talked about resonate? Maybe try one small thing, a short mindfulness moment. Identify one stressor to approach differently.
Or just reach out to someone in your support network.
Exactly. Even a small step done consciously can start to shift things.
Well, that's our deep dive for today. Lots to think about there.
Definitely.
Until next time, take care, everyone.